101.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape Drive Time, welcome back to the show. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line, query, comment, and or criticize. A story that's been breaking all day is that Saudi Arabia has convicted 8 people charged in the killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And this is according to Saudi Arabian state media. A court handed 20-year sentences to 5 people charged in the case, 3 others 7 to 10 years. No names at the moment. Online to tell us more about this development is David Hurst from the Middle East Eye. And of course, Middle East Eye, 3 W's dot Middle East Eye. Go into Google, it'll get you right there onto the webpage, the latest news about the Middle East. But David Hurst, welcome to the show.
Hello, Shafiq.
This is certainly interesting. I think that's the only way I can describe it right now. As like yourself, I try and scrabble together as much information as I can about what has just happened.
Yeah, well, the Saudis have never released the names of the people that it says it has committed to trial as a result of this. The only names we know of actually comes from the Turks, because the Turks have started a similar trial. And we know that even if the Saudis did publish the names, they would be the foot soldiers, the lesser people involved. We already know that the main people who organized a highly thought-out assassination attempt in a foreign country have got away. And that is Ahmed al-Asiri, who was Saudi Arabia's deputy head of military intelligence at the time of Khashoggi's murder. And he was also head of the so-called Tiger Squad, the elite unit that operated under him, and the other guy, Saud al-Qahtani. Both of those have never, ever been on trial. Even though at least one of them has been named by both the UN rapporteur, Agnes Callamard, and the U.S. Treasury itself. The U.S. Treasury sanctioned Qahtani and described him as a senior official of the government of Saudi Arabia who was part of the planning and execution of the operation that led to the killing of Mr. Khashoggi. So neither U.S. Treasury nor indeed the U.N. Special Rapporteur believe implicitly that these proceedings have any real credibility.
So it leads to the rhetorical question. Well, it's a rhetorical question for us because we haven't got a Saudi in the room. Why go ahead with this? Because at the end of the day, I'm sure you'll agree with me, this isn't going to fool anybody.
Well, it's cover. It's useful for material for Trump, who says, well, there was a judicial proceeding. Of course, we know this is complete nonsense, because we now know from court proceedings filed on the East Coast of America that a similar murder operation was launched at Toronto Airport against another Saudi dissident, a former interior minister called Saad al-Jabri, only 2 weeks after this killing, and that was a 50-man squad. So exactly the same procedure, different personnel, same composition, was launched against another dissident. So you can't in all truth say, whoops, these are a bunch of officials who got my orders wrong. This was an absolute specific campaign, and now there's an absolute mountain of evidence, independent evidence, that this was the case. Trump, however, could get up in public and say, you see, there is something called the rule of law in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, of course, being Trump, he's not going to specify what kind of rule of law in Saudi Arabia.
No, he's not. And again, this is just another attempt. I mean, this has been a very, very long-running affair. Just to take you back a little bit in time, firstly, it was the most recorded assassination in history, and there was actually a tape of the killing from bugs planted in the Consul General's office where the killing started, in an adjacent room where it actually took place. So they actually hear everything that was going on. That tape was verified by the head of the CIA and verified also by Congress. In fact, there's now an attempt by Congress to get the official version of this killing by the CIA out onto the public record, because that's never happened. And then after that, the sons of and the remaining family of Jamal Khashoggi were paid vast sums, basically as blood money. They denied at first it was blood money, but then when push came to shove, the people who were sent, again, unnamed people who were sentenced to death for the murder, were let off. This has been a sham from the very start, and absolutely no one believes it.
Of course, and I mean, I think the other thing that we need to sort of put out there is that this whole assassination thing seems to have been an official policy directive, because Mohammed bin Salman has been fingered, I think, by the United Nations Special Rapporteur.
Yes, Agnes Callamard. She actually pressed the United Nations to start official criminal proceedings, but she was quashed by her general secretary. So her words have just been words rather than leading to anything. But the report pulled absolutely no punches. She said there was prima facie evidence to investigate this as a state killing. Bin Salman can think that he's got away with it, and really, at his level of operation, there isn't such a thing called international justice. That's just unfortunately reserved for African heads of state, but certainly not anyone nearly as important to the West as him. And he thinks he can get away with it. However, this report and this affair keeps on churning away. In particular, it's interesting what Joe Biden, the Democrat nominee, has said about Mohammed bin Salman. He said some very interesting things about changing the relationship with him personally, if and when he becomes president. Certainly, Congress don't believe this appalling series of lies. Nor does, Washington opinion within the Beltway. So, there are, as I said before, a number of legal actions still ongoing, which determine, in fact, MBS's ability just to pop up in Washington alongside either Netanyahu or Trump himself. So it is having an effect. On the one hand, he thinks, yes, he's got away with it. No one is really hunting his head, outside the kingdom at least. But on the other, this is a major, major affair that just will not lie down as far as he's concerned. It's almost impossible for him to turn up now in Washington without being the target of either flash demonstrations or lawsuits.
And of course, I mean, there is a very real possibility that it may not be a Trump-friendly universe after the end of the year. If, for argument's sake, somebody like Joe Biden does get into power, it could get a little bit frosty in Washington for Mohammed bin Salman. And I'm going to enjoy being a fly on the wall on that scenario if that actually does happen.
Yeah, well, I'm being a cynic. I'll wait until right. I see what actually Biden does as president in this regard, when he actually does it. I'm not holding my breath for it. But what he said, what he's gone on the record as saying, is that he will rethink his relationship with Mohammed bin Salman. Of course, no one expects U.S. troops to pull out all of their multiple bases in Saudi Arabia, because it's just so strategically important as far as monitoring and protecting vital crude oil supplies going through the Gulf. But that doesn't mean that they will keep the same cozy relationship they've had with Mohammed bin Salman. And one's got to distinguish here between official U.S. policy, which, as I said before, allows for statements like the Treasury Department, and actually what Trump and his clan and his family actually do. Once Mohammed bin Salman loses the actual protection, the umbrella of Trump, and in particular his son-in-law Jared Kushner, and once the relationships become state-to-state again, and not family-to-family or clan-to-clan, then the whole dynamic changes, and all the cousins and nephews of the young prince, whom the young prince in his Machiavellian way has robbed and imprisoned, are still alive. And they are much closer to American thinking or Pentagon thinking than Mohammed bin Salman is. So under Biden, some very interesting things could happen to Mohammed bin Salman himself, not to the relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, but specifically the relationship between all of the American deep state and Mohammed bin Salman, because they've got a few scores to settle with him.
Oh, yes, very, very much so. You know, I think it would be very naive for any of us to assume that the very large Saudi royal family is a happy camp. But there's something, also another dimension I'd like you to comment on. You mentioned Saudi Arabia-U.S. relationships. The other day I was looking at the extent of arms sales, the amount of arms that Saudi Arabia and particularly the UAE have been buying from the U.S. It seems almost as if there's been a shift more from oil interests to arms interests, and also bearing in mind that the United States is becoming less dependent upon external oil due to fracking.
Yes, absolutely. And Trump has made very, very few bones out of the fact that he's a transactional president, and that because the Saudi Arabia and the Emirates are buying such a quantity of U.S. arms, therefore that is part of the policy with Saudi Arabia and the UAE that America cannot afford to lose. These arms have actually contributed to a real hell of a war in a war without end in Yemen, and the Democrats are now more seized with the effects and the use of these arms than the sale of the arms themselves. In that sense, the public attitudes are shifting both in America and also here in London as well. There's more of a groundswell about the effects of a five-year war that has achieved none of its aims and left literally millions of Yemenis on the point of starvation. Yemen itself has been effectively partitioned because the Emirates control the southern part of it, Aden, and even the northern port of Hodeidah and the island of Socotra, for their own interests. That's against the interests of the exiled President Hadi, who remains in Riyadh. And so effectively what you have is a five-year campaign in Yemen which hasn't dislodged the Houthis from the seat of government, the capital of Sana'a. They've still got missiles capable of hitting palaces in Riyadh. They're not militarily any weaker than they were at the start of this campaign, and you've got Yemen effectively partitioned. So it's a mess. That's more in the public consciousness in our parliament here and in Congress than the quantity of sales of U.S. arms. And so I think, interestingly, although, again, I'm not expecting any huge revolution under Joe Biden, just a change of regime in itself will put the skids under Mohammed bin Salman, or at least make him much warier. The alternative is for him to turn dramatically to Vladimir Putin or to Xi Jinping in China and say, right, America has not served us well, where will you step in? But that's easier said than done. It's not easy militarily, I'm told, to change horses in terms of the number of years it takes to actually just to change military equipment. You can't just change it overnight. You can't just fly in a load of MiGs and fly out a load of F-35s. A lot more has to happen for that change to be militarily effective. And that's a process that takes years. So it's not as if MBS has as an alternative to turn to when it comes to the defense of Saudi Arabia, which Trump himself said would fall within 2 weeks if the Americans pulled out.
No, interesting stuff indeed. And of course, final question, Saud al-Jabari in Canada actually surviving an assassination attempt to buy one of these assassination teams. So in a sense, this is an issue apart from Jamal Khashoggi. This isn't going to go away overnight, is it? This is going to be with us for some time.
Yes, Saud al-Jabari was a very heavyweight Minister of Interior, unlike Jamal, who is just a well-informed journalist, basically. And he actually has proof and evidence of a whole load of wrongdoings, which he's recorded on tape as almost like a life insurance policy, should any one of his many assassination attempts get through to him. He's been very heavily guarded somewhere around in the vicinity of Toronto. But there have been at least two assassination attempts against him that I am aware of. And he now has a writ in a court against Mohammed bin Salman. And so that will be interesting to follow. He knows a lot. He's got real information because he was, as I say, in the heart of government. I think a lot of people, and my feeling is, reading through the court papers at the time, that he was a primary factor, one of the primary sources of the CIA's determination that MBS was behind the killing of Khashoggi. It was human intelligence, and I think it was his testimony as well that led to that conclusion, along with all the other and the mountain of evidence of actually what happened in the Saudi consulate. So he's an integral part of the case that has been built up on Jamal Khashoggi's death, and he's still alive and will be alive for the foreseeable future. So this is not going away for Mohammed bin Salman, and if Biden becomes president, could be a bit of a turning point for him.
No, absolutely interesting stuff indeed. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there. David Hurst, Middle East Eye, 3ws.middleeasteye.net will get you right to the spot. David Hurst, as always, a great pleasure. Stay safe.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.